20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are presented today by Luigi's Pizza. A huge thank you to Luigi's for sponsoring our draft content all weekend long. We're going to be going today over our day two review and our day three preview. It feels crazy to me that we are already on day three and it is here Saturday, rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7. And then, of course, you jump right into undrafted free agency. We've got a ton to get into. Again, we're going to be breaking down everything that Green Bay did on day two, some of the key picks that were made throughout the course of day two. And then, of course, what Green Bay might be able to accomplish on day three as well. We've got a lot to get into. Before we get in there, first of all, again, as I mentioned, a thank you to Luigi's Pizza. I did have my ultra thin and crispy pepperoni pizza prior to the draft on Friday. It was delicious. It had the crispy crust. The cheese is what separates. Actually, it's the cheese and the sauce, if I'm being honest. The cheese is always insanely delicious. It is just the right perfect mozzarella that you want on any sort of pizza. And then the sauce. I don't know what they do with the sauce. It is sweet, but yet it has a little bit of obviously salt and a little bit of just that perfect tomato-y bite that you want from it. It's got a little spice to it too. It's just everything about it is absolutely perfect. Pepperonis are great. All of their toppings are incredible. Whatever kind of pizza you want, whether it is the self-rising dough, the fresh dough pizza, or whether it is the ultra thin and crispy, I recommend all of the Luigi's pizzas. Make sure to check them out. You can get them at Festival Foods, Woodman's Markets, and of course, all around the state of Wisconsin and surrounding states. So make sure to get yourself a Luigi's pizza when you can. Shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Tony G, Andrew Schwartz, Solar Miner, Kyle Sensabaugh, Purple Pill, Douglas Enquist, Sean O'Brien, Caleb Offord, Tyler Straber, BJ Ray, PJB, Wisco Moe, Freddie Gingrich, ADEBZB, Keely Kuru, and Gold Assassin 02. Thank you guys so much for signing up for those memberships. I appreciate you guys a ton. Also, if you have the opportunity, hit that like button, subscribe if you can. Those things help the channel a ton. And if you haven't checked out those memberships, of course, make sure to do that as well. One other thing, today I'm going to be doing a live Q&A, Titletown Brewery in Green Bay. That's going to be going on from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., two-hour live Q&A, answering any questions that you guys have. We'll do a little bit of a meet and greet at the end as well. So really looking forward to that. If you can get out there, would love to see you guys, meet you in person, and just thank you in person for all the support, but hoping to see all of you guys. Titletown Brewery, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. tonight on Saturday, following the draft and recapping everything that happened on day three and the draft, of course, in its entirety as well. All right, overarching feels from day two, I would use the word uneven, certainly unpredictable, and maybe a little bit unbalanced, and kind of goes with uneven as well. But I would not have expected certainly two offensive players to go already with Matthew Golden, who they selected. I would not necessarily have expected doubling up at wide receiver. Apparently, neither did Brian Gutekunst, because he said, flat out, I did not expect to come up here talking to you guys about two wide receivers. That's, I don't think, the direction that they were exactly planning on. But that's what they ended up with. You end up with zero defensive picks on the first day, 2 days of the draft. You end up with three offensive players, including two wide receivers and an offensive tackle. I think if most people were to probably weigh out the needs of Green Bay going into this draft, which is not what you want to attack a draft doing, is attacking needs. But if most people would have weighed them out, pass rush would have been very high on that list. Corner would have been very high on that list. Wide receiver would have been high on that list. And then, you know, probably again, some sort of run-stopping defensive tackle, and then some depth along the offensive line. If I would have told people that they came away with no wide receivers in the first three rounds, people probably would have been upset. I think that would have probably got to people that they didn't draft a wide receiver at all on day one or two of the draft. However, I don't know that anyone was necessarily begging for two wide receivers. I do think there's been a lot of appetite for corner and or for, obviously any of the, defensive line positions, whether that be defensive end or defensive tackle. So that is definitely something that, again, you would have maybe expected a little bit more of, but just did not get in this situation. And that's where I think it just comes away feeling a little bit uneven when it comes to three offensive players and no defensive players. I will say that I think one of the things that's underrated just about this draft in general is I do think offensive line was a greater need than maybe some people were sort of defining it as. I know they went out and got Aaron Banks in free agency, but what I will say is this. This offensive line going into the draft was really six players deep. And that's not to take away from Kadeem Telford or Travis Glover or Jacob Monk, maybe even a Donovan Jennings, who I think have the ability to promote into better players this year and maybe into higher positions on that depth chart. But as of right now, I don't know that you want to count on any of them. Our last indication was that the first two up off the bench when some injuries hit after, of course, you know, Jordan Morgan was out and you had some injuries on the line. It was Travis Glover and then Kadeem Telford. And both of those did not go well. Now, Philly is about the worst case scenario for that to happen against. And Philly has an unbelievable defensive line in a playoff game on the road, not getting reps throughout the week. That's about as awful of a situation that you could possibly have to come into. But they were not up to the task. And I don't think you want to go into the season hoping that they're going to be now up to that task. You can never, ever, ever have enough depth and talent along the offensive line. And you're going to probably need seven offensive linemen at some point this year. Probably more than that. Green Bay got pretty lucky along the offensive line until the playoffs last year. But you're probably going to need seven offensive linemen. And I felt comfortable with six going into the draft. So the fact that you are going to need that through the course of the season and want that seventh guy, I think this was a bit of an underrated position by most people. And it's one of those things where we saw it against Philly. And it's all fine that you got your six guys that are ready to go right now. It's all fine and well until two guys go down. Just two along the offensive line go down. And Travis Glover or Jacob Monk or Kadeem Telford are now one of your full-time starters along the offensive line. And then it becomes a major problem. And we have seen this in the past, whether it be with Kyle Murphy, Byron Bell, Alex Light. You know, we can go on and on. Justin McCrary, players that just could not hold their own on the offensive line, and it crumbles everything. It hurts Josh Jacobs extensively. It hurts your passing game, which hurts your wide receiver. It's just like everything crumbles when you don't have that protection up front. I'm not defending or saying that Anthony Belton was a, you know, 1A choice at that spot. We're going to go over that here more in just a moment. But what I will say is I do think that offensive line spot was a much bigger need, is maybe aggressive or strong, but I would honestly just say it is a bigger need than what people defined it as. I have no issue with Green Bay going offensive line on day two at any point, whether it be round two or round three, and you can never have enough of those guys. So I'll just say that first and foremost, but definitely don't think that Green Bay was expecting three offensive players. Don't think that they were expecting two wide receivers doubling up. I said flat out, one of the things I felt maybe most confident in with those first three picks is that they would not double up at one position. Well, they did, and it would have been at a position I really didn't think they were going to do it at, in that wide receiver. But they did. They trusted their board. And if you want to get into some of my real deep philosophical conversations about this, I go to my gut reactions one. I spent a lot of time kind of talking about some of these things just to kind of recap them really quick. But you can, again, check them out in greater detail on my immediate reactions video to both of these draft picks. Number one is I will just say the board doesn't always go exactly the way that you want it to. You can choose your own adventure to some way, but you can't always control what players are going to fall to you at what positions. You have to let the board a lot of times come to you naturally. Especially if you can't get up or if you can't move down, you just have to let it come to you, and you have to take what is the best player available on your board and trust your process. I don't think any team quite trust their process as much as Green Bay. I'm not saying that's going to always get perfect results. I'm not saying it's infallible. I'm not saying they can't make mistakes. I'm not saying it gives them a blank check to make poor decisions, but I love the fact that they're convicted in their board and they're going to go with the selections, whether it's going to make the fans happy or not, whether it's going to be a position of quote unquote need or not, they are going to trust their board and try to get the best player available for the franchise. And say what you may about the player that they might end up with, what that output might end up being, but I love the overarching philosophy that they're going to put all this time, effort, and energy into their scouting process and the analytical process and putting that board together. If you do all of that and you get to draft day and the guy on your board that it says to take is Anthony Belton, and you go 10 slots down to take a player at a different position because they play maybe more of a position of need, you didn't trust the process that you've put together up until this point. And of course, there's a law of diminishing returns. You have to be cognizant of it. You know, if I let's be real, okay? Let's be 100% real. If in round four, Green Bay gets on the clock and the top player up on their board is a wide receiver, I'm sorry, but you can't do it. Green Bay is out of the wide receiver market from here on out. I don't care if Torrey Horton is available at any point. I don't care if Elik Ayomanar is there at any point. I don't care who your favorite receiver is. Deontay Thornton, guy I really like. You just can't take any more wide receivers. You're at your max capacity. Like first day of the draft, you have 205,000 wide receivers already. You can't take any more. I apologize. So yeah, that's not something they can do anymore. But I love the fact that they genuinely and generally, both of them, trust their board. It's better process more often than not. And again, the board does not always go your way. You can't predict what way that's going to go. And it's better more often again to go with the guy that's best there. Then that kind of goes with number two is, again, trust your board, trust your process. I like that overarching philosophy. The next thing I'll say is, from an offensive line standpoint, there is a changing of the guard that's happening right now. And you always have to be on the pulse of the NFL and what's kind of happening. And we have seen Green Bay, I think, really start to transition into more of a Josh Jacobs style power running game. And a style that fits, I'm not saying like actual power, meaning that's the sort of blocking scheme they're using, but like literally using Josh Jacobs as their power back and going with a more physical offensive attack. And we saw that transition in real time last year. But one of the things that they didn't have was the people movers up front. Hello, Anthony Belton. Hello, Aaron Banks. They're going to move some people. They really want to move some people. And I think that's going to help the red zone. I think it's going to help your short yardage. That's going to help your running game. And I think that's going to really be a potential impact for this team. So I like the fact that they're maybe making this transition to more mauling run game, you know, type of players that are going to help in the red zone, short yardage, et cetera. I think they've needed some guys like this. I've talked about it so many times in the past. They need a few more ass kickers. They got an ass kicker in Anthony Belton. And I'm excited about that. And I think they're keeping, again, their pulse on where the league is going right now. You better be able to run the ball down some people's throats. And Anthony Belton, whether now or in the future, projects as somebody that's going to be able to help you do that. And then the last one is just from a receiving standpoint or from an offensive standpoint, you are in a world right now where teams are definitely trying to stop the run. And they're definitely trying to make sure that you do not get big plays over the top. And what happens is you've got this shell, basically, that you know, you've got your strong guys up front stopping the run, your safety's crashing down, everyone's good at setting the edge, everyone's good at holding up their gaps. And then you've got a lot of two safety stuff, again, making sure that players are not getting deep down the field. And what happens? It's a lot of underneath. It's a lot of checkdowns. It's a lot of little crossers, and it's a lot of gadgety plays, and it's a lot of little bubble screens. And you better have players who can take little checkdowns and all those plays I just mentioned and get run after the catch and run violent and get extra yardage. And what you get with Savion Williams is somebody that is going to fit that. You now have the ability to throw a lot of players out on the field, whether it be Josh Jacobs or Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, Savion Williams, whomever it might be, right? That have the ability to break tackles, run through things, and make big plays happen with the ball in their hands. That's something that Savion Williams is very good at. And I think he sort of fits a modern NFL where everything's underneath. All right, we'll get those underneath wide receivers that can run after the catch really well. And Savion Williams definitely projects as somebody that can do that. So just kind of keeping their, again, their finger on the pulse of the league and kind of going in those directions that it's going in. I think their day two picks really help with some of that, with a more mauling offensive attack along the line and a receiver that can be used in so many different ways that is so good with the ball in his hands and running after the catch, even regardless of how you get the ball in his hands. Of course, remember that before we get into our kind of scouting reports here, the deep dives are going to be coming out this coming week. So we'll probably do Sunday will be a recap of day three. Monday will be kind of a recap and an all-encompassing look at the weekend as a whole. And then my guess is Tuesday will probably be your first deep dive into your first round pick, in this case, Matthew Golden. And then, you know, probably Wednesday is probably going to be Anthony Belton, and we'll go one day after the other with those deep dives. So look forward to those next week. If you're looking for the really intense content on all of these players, it's coming around the bend. This is going to take me right these next few days and each day leading up to it, going through the tape in insane detail. If you have not stuck around for the deep dives before, in the previous drafts, they are intense. I'm not going to leave any stone left unturned. We're going to go through everything that you need to know. And I'm going to watch a crap ton of tape as much film as I can basically get my hands on for these players over the course of these next couple weeks. So that's coming down the road. But just some quick notes here that I had on Anthony Belton, again, in my scouting report prior to him being drafted. 6'6", 336, 7.72 relative athletic score, only 20 on the bench, which was his his worst testing, which is a little bit interesting. He's very much a Packers type. He does hit all the agility stuff and things like that. Now, I say that, but the size is definitely unique. This is the heaviest player that they now have on their team at 6'6", 336, and he's played much heavier than that in college in the past. That's a little bit new, but he hits a lot of the agility stuff that Green Bay normally looks for. He was 97th on the consensus big board. Remember, he got taken 54th overall. Dane Brugler had him 94th on his board. I'll say it one more time. He was taken 54th overall. And Daniel Jeremiah had him 118th on his big board. So this went against the normal consensus. One thing that Justice brought up, which I think is very noteworthy here, is Belton was somebody that was rising late in the process. And usually, I don't buy the stock is getting hot for a player, because I agree when people say there's no stock for the players. It's more that the people in the media and the at home scouts, if you are catching up to what's actually the NFL is known for, for the most part, some months now. But when you see somebody like Anthony Belton go on 18 visits, on 18 top 30 visits, before the draft and during the top 30 visit period, that usually believes or makes you believe that there are some, maybe coaches or GMs that are very interested and maybe got a little bit more keen to him late in the process. And you know how sometimes if you've been in a fantasy football league or a fantasy baseball league where you really wanted a player, or you liked a player and you thought you were maybe going to be able to get them later, and then all of a sudden there's maybe this buzz of I wonder if, he might like that player too. And then he might like that player. And all of a sudden it's and I went into things thinking I was going to get this player in the fifth or sixth round of my fantasy draft. And all of a sudden I feel like if I want to get him, I have to take him round two, or there's a bunch of buzz around a player, someone to maybe take him a little bit earlier. And there's always the person that takes him a little bit before, everyone else thinking we really like this guy as a fourth rounder. Or a third round or whatever it might be. And there's always that one person that takes him, a whole round earlier than you were expecting. You're like, what? That was a guy I really liked, but you just took him there? It almost feels a little bit like that with Green Bay, with Anthony Belton, of there's a lot of this buzz building up. He goes on 18 team visits and Green Bay's like, well, we like this guy. We had him in for a visit. We thought we were going to get him later, but now all these offensive linemen are going, it's round two. We'll take him round two. It felt maybe, but what I'll add on top of that is every offensive lineman, for the most part, right, really moved up a step. Guys like Kelvin Banks in the first round, we thought maybe we were going to go mid to late first, go in the top 10. And we saw all of these offensive linemen really get bumped up about a half of a round, maybe where you're expecting. Now, I'm not saying, from 118 on Daniel Jeremiah's board to 54 or 97th on the consensus big board to 54. But just remember, there is no real consensus big board. These are all in the eye of the beholder. And Green Bay clearly had Anthony Belton a little bit higher than everyone else did. And it's possible, right? Remember, everyone's starting to catch on to Anthony Belton a little bit later in the process, even maybe from the NFL standpoint. It's possible that in a month from now, if, everyone in the scouting community, not in the NFL, had more time to catch up to it, maybe they would have ended in the same similar spot that he was probably a top 60 guy. I do really like a lot of the things on his film, but interesting kind of consensus grades there. Had a 69.1 grade on 802 snaps per PFF, 68.6 the year before that, and 67.7 the year before that. So a remarkably consistent player at left tackle these past 3 years for NC State. The fit, I think, is a tackle guard. Potential future starting guard is, I think, what you're looking at. But he'll compete. They'll get their best five guys on the field, and we'll see what this means for the offensive line. We'll talk about that in a little bit. My notes, again, prior to the draft, this was weeks ago. Strong hands, great demeanor. You're going to love the way this guy plays football. He is nasty. He is physical. He plays through the whistle. He looks for work. He's got great size, tested well in everything except the bench press. Again, plays through the whistle. Does get caught lunging and gets caught off balance. That's something he has to be a little bit more under control. And especially in the run game, he gets caught moving forward and it just can be a bit of an issue at his size after that. Playing too high at 6'6 also becomes an issue, just kind of exposing himself a little bit too much, getting his chest out there. And then again, defensive lineman, smart defensive lineman, good defensive lineman can kind of control him a little bit more. Doesn't have great balance and will end up on the ground or out of position far too often. And then has the potential to be an impact run blocker, which does get you very excited. 32 starts at left tackle. Definitely a dancing bear at the position. Great footwork, great agility, but massive size. Was ejected for spitting on a Clemson player during a game per Dane Brugler in his draft guide. That's a wonderful thing that you love to see. Has had some penalty issues. And then what you really love is that he's got some physicality and some mauling ability, a little bit of a different flavor of an offensive lineman than maybe they have. And again, it seems like they're going in a different direction here with Anthony Belton and with Aaron Banks as their two additions this offseason along the offensive line. They're two heaviest players on the entirety of the Packers roster right now. My final thought on him, again, this was written weeks ago, a likely swing tackle who has the ability to develop into a starter with some technique work. So swing tackle to start off with, left tackle, right tackle, put him where you need to. And then with as time goes on, keep developing your craft and he probably becomes a starter down the road. Now, whether he ends up at tackle or guard remains to be seen. Those are things that can kind of play out over time. He was announced as a tackle. Goody said he can play tackle or guard. He also said that Jordan Morgan will continue to be utilized at left tackle. So that's my guess is where Morgan stays for now. And it wouldn't surprise me if at some point we started to see Anthony Belton get moved into right guard. For Dane Brugler, this was his breakdown. Because of his size, you won't need to know his jersey number to spot him on film. He received the nickname Escalade inside the NC State program because of the way he can move at his best in inside zone runs. He can get in the way of a blocker and control rushers if his hands are right, a big if. Overall, Belton uses his size and length to keep the game on his terms, staying centered and forcing defenders to try to go through him. When he is unable to do that, his body control and footwork break down quickly, which needs to be further addressed by NFL coaching. With improved consistency, he has the tools to get on the field and contribute. Lance Zierlein said, Belton is an enormous tackle with good power and long arms. He can bulldoze the roads clean for run blocking or for running backs, but needs to play with better hand placement to sustain his early lead. Belton has the length to shove rushers up and around the pocket, but his punch timing is inconsistent and he lacks the body control to consistently respond to inside counters. If a team can steady his feet and improve his hand placement, he could become a solid starter at right tackle, but he will need some help from time to time. His fit with Green Bay is depth right now, and it would not surprise me if Rashid Walker gets competition from Jordan Morgan, and if Sean Ryan gets some competition here from Anthony Belton. That would make the most sense to me, and I'm sure they're going to get their best five guys out there and have a lot of competition. And then I know there's a lot of question marks about Jordan Morgan and what this means for him. What I would say about Jordan Morgan is this has zero onus, zero impact, zero, sort of correlation, zero commentary on anything about Jordan Morgan. There's no connection here whatsoever. I saw some people say, well, now they drafted this guy in the second round, Jordan Morgan's a bust. I've never quite seen people jump to the bust conclusion so much for a player that the only real reason that you're saying that is because he got hurt. He was injured. He was going to be the starting guard last year. He was just going to. And then he played about, 300 snaps? And they were not the most exciting, exhilarating 300 snaps that you would ever see. But he hung. He was fine. And I'll say it again. Dan Moore got $20 million this past offseason. Different position, left tackle, and Morgan was mostly at guard this past year. But Dan Moore got $20 million for playing fine. Fine got him $20 million. Morgan looked fine. And I think that was in his first reps at a new position, by the way, playing guard, something he was not familiar with. He looked completely like he was going to hold his own. There's no bust here yet. And I don't see it, actually. I think he's just going to be a starting offensive lineman, whether it's this year or next year, it's going to happen. And in the meantime, he's great depth. He's probably going to get quite a few snaps this year, either as a rotational player, a starter, or at worst, there's probably going to be injuries and he's going to be the first guy up. He's going to play a lot. I don't understand that quite yet, but this pick has zero anything to do with anything with Jordan Morgan. Just gives you more depth at the position. That's my overarching take here on everything that has to do with Anthony Belton. Let's get over to their third round pick, which was a very fun one in Savion Williams. A lot to discuss with Savion Williams. All right, so 6'4", 222, no relative athletic score, but was 94th percentile in height, 96th percentile in weight, ran a 4.48 40, which was in the 81st percentile. Definitely feels like a Packers type. And Brian Gutekunst said he is a very great fit within Matt LaFleur's offense. He was consensus 96th on the big board. Brugler did not have him in the top 100. Daniel Jeremiah had him at 123. He had a 78.9 grade on 525 snaps, including a 90.5 rushing grade. Had a 72.9 grade the year before that, 58.8 the year before that, and 60.8 the year before that, always at TCU. His fit within Green Bay, gadget-style wide receiver, and what I would say is a complete and utter wild card. There is some of the most incredible stuff with Savion Williams in every direction imaginable. What I mean by that is you will watch him play and he will make ridiculously unbelievable catches. He will make athletic catches up in the air, going up and making things just look like, again, like he's one of the greatest receivers in football. And then you will look at him at other times and he's like not tracking the ball correctly and the ball bounce off his hands on a simple catch, or it's like, just like it's crazy. And again, this is not like what you're going to get all the time, but as an evaluator, as you're looking at this, you get some of the most wild stuff all over. He's going to give you like an A or like a D, or maybe like a B plus or a D minus on almost any play. I don't know if it's an A or an F, but it's like a B plus or a D minus, and you're just not sure which one you're going to get. He is a wild card. Like I said, sometimes looking like one of the best players in college football, and other times being like, is this a real legitimate, you know, third round pick here? It's remarkable. Just a wild card and something you're not exactly sure what you're maybe going to get on a play-to-play basis. But he's going to definitely bring something new to this team, and that's what certainly gives me some excitement. There's no Savion Williams currently on this roster. It's a new flavor of wide receiver, which I am always here for. I do think he has the ability to be a gadget wide receiver, played some wildcat quarterback, fantastic ability to break tackles, and overall his run after catch ability is really impressive. He's got bizarro hands. He'll make the most ridiculous catches you'll possibly see and then drop the most easy catches you'd possibly see. Again, wild card. Height, weight, speed guy. Get the ball in his hands and just let him cook. Doesn't have to be just a gadget guy. I do think he can project to be a true legitimate outside wide receiver as well. I don't think he's a natural at wide receiver. I think he's got better, but I don't think he's quite a natural just like hands catcher, tracker of the ball. You see that he's got all of these traits, but it just is, you know, a little bit of a work in progress, if nothing else. He can go up and get the ball. Tracking the ball needs a lot of work. I would have liked to have seen him play a little bit more on special teams, but I do think he can be a shorter intermediate player that you get the ball in his hands, whether it be via checkdowns, crossers, end arounds, reverses, out of the backfield. You can do so much stuff with them and just get the ball in his hands and let him work, because that is where he is at his best. Dane Brugler said he split his 2024 snaps between wide receiver, always on the left side, and the backfield, 84 snaps, as either a running back or wildcat quarterback, with just 23 targets of more than 10 yards, resulting in 9 catches. He was basically an extension of the run game on screens and slants. He also averaged 8 carries per game over the final 6 contests of 2024. A big, physical, imposing athlete, Williams has some freaky traits that will tease playmaking flashes. Very fitting that he grew up idolizing Kelvin Johnson. He can play above the rim and has a knack for pulling in contested catches, but he needs to show better confidence in his hands and improve the details of his routes. Overall, TCU leaned into Williams' unique athletic profile in 2024, and the manufactured touches showcased his ability to create with the ball, However, the move came out of necessity because of Williams' inconsistencies as a traditional receiver. He projects more as a joker weapon and needs a creative caller who can utilize him in different ways, similar to Cordero Patterson. Lance Zierlein says, a developmental wideout who offers an alluring blend of physical gifts and untapped potential. Williams is big, strong, and fast, but very raw as a route runner and is unreliable with his hands. His production is uneven as a traditional wideout, but he adds a dynamic kick to the offense as a gadget runner and as a catch and run option underneath. He excels in power sweeps and is willful enough for consideration on short yardage and goal line carries on direct snaps. The ball skills can be hit or miss, but there are flashes to work with on tape. The difference between siren song or pot of gold could rest in Williams' technical development and the creativity of his play caller, which is a good thing because Green Bay has a very creative play caller. Fit with Green Bay, Goody said he's going to be a wide receiver that maybe can do some other stuff, but he said he's very excited to see what Matt LaFleur can do with him and thinks that creativity will come out. I think this is, again, a different, unique tool that they have and more wide receiver competition. On notice are the Packers wide receivers. You want snaps? You go out and earn them. You better have that urgency. There are way too many players right now that could potentially win spots. This is going to be, as Justice Mosqueda posted, the Joker breaking the pool cue in half and throwing it out there and saying, who wants this? I love it. They have every type of weapon imaginable. You've got gadget guys. You've got slot guys, outside guys, possession guys, deep guys, speed guys. You've got everything. You've got everything. So figure out ways to use them. You've got two tight ends. You've got multiple running back types. You can do so many different things with this offense. You got run blocking types on the line, pass blocking types, maulers, non-maulers. Put it together the best way that it needs to be put together, but you have done, Goody's done everything to give every type of player imaginable that Matt LaFleur could want to run his offense. Positions that did not get selected on Saturday. We obviously broke down the two players they did select, but you did not get defensive end. You did not get defensive tackle. You did not get corner. You did not get anything on defense. Nose tackle is another one. Those are some interesting decisions. How about some players that could be available at those positions? If you're looking, you're probably fourth, fifth round for some of these guys. Some names to keep an eye on. There's actually a decent amount of edge rushers that are still there. Braden Swinson is a guy I really, really love. Jack Sawyer, Elijah Roberts, Kyle Kennard, Fadil Diggs, Barry Sorrell, Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, all very unique pass rushers that could fit for Green Bay. Defensive tackle, Joshua Farmer, Cam Horsley, keep an eye on those two. And then corner, Jason Marshall Jr., Bilal Cohn, and Micah Robinson are a few names to keep an eye on. Round two, just in totality, some moves that I really liked, as much as it pains me to say, Luther Burden to the Bears. I think they've got DJ Moore and Rome Odunze on the outside. They kind of could use that slot guy. I think Luther Burden can do everything, but putting him in the slot. One player, though, that I will say that he did remind me of from a negative standpoint from time to time was Anthony Miller, the former Bears second round receiver, who was a complete bust. I think Burden's way better, but I thought Anthony Miller was going to be awesome as well. So it is a little bit interesting. There's a little bit of that sort of same kind of player slot guy that just didn't really work out in the NFL. We'll see if they made the same mistake with Burden or if I made the same mistake with Burden because I liked him as well. But very interesting pick there at the early round two for the Bears. Donovan Ezeraku goes to the Cowboys. You know how much I love Ezeraku. JT Tuamalu goes to the Colts. It's a good fit for them. Ariante Ursery to the Texans. They're trying to remake that offensive line. I like that pick for them. Elijah Arroyo, the tight end for the Seahawks. He's going to give them a different move piece along that tight end position in Seattle. And then Jack Besh to the Raiders. Some of my favorite round two selections. Round three, probably the move that I disliked the most throughout the course of the day was the Lions giving up multiple third round picks to go get Isaac Tesla. That was very over aggressive, but I love that the Lions were the team to do it, but that did not like that pick and just with the move up in and of itself. Some moves I did like in round three, Jalen Noel to the Texans, Kevin Winston Jr., the safety to the Titans, and Caleb Rogers, the offensive lineman to the Raiders. Some NFC North recaps here so far. The Bears have received or picked so far Colston Loveland, Luther Burden III, Ozzie Trapilo, and Shamar Turner. So they go a little bit fun early on in Loveland and Burden, two receiving options for Caleb Williams. Makes sense. They did a lot of time on the trenches in free agency, so they get to kind of go out and have a little bit of fun in the draft getting a tight end and a receiver. And then they go back to the trenches, Trapillo has the opportunity to start at tackle, and Shamar Turner is going to be part of their rotation on the interior of that defensive line. The Vikings took Donovan Jackson day one, only Ty Felton at the end of day two. Interesting selection there. He was a player Green Bay had in for a top 30 visit. He also makes some sense for Minnesota. You've got Addison and Jefferson who can play on the outside. Felton a little bit more of a slot guy and can, I think, can play a little bit of everywhere, but he could make some sense for them. The Lions took Tyleek Williams on Thursday. They took Tate Rutledge and Isaac Tesla on Friday. We talked about Tesla. Rutledge is a really fun player. He looks the part of a very impressive offensive lineman with his aesthetic, but he is a Detroit Lions type of player through and through, is likely going to start at right guard sooner rather than later. And then, of course, your Green Bay Packers, Matthew Golden, Anthony Belton, and Savion Williams, their haul so far. A couple final thoughts here. Shedeur Sanders still on the board. You start getting into that point of, would Green Bay consider him? I think the answer is no here. In a vacuum, totally cool with it. If you're just taking Shedeur Sanders and you can have him be your number three this year behind Willis and Love, Willis probably, you know, walks next offseason. You can move Shedeur into that backup role. Great. I don't get a feel that he and or his dad are going to be too thrilled with being a number three quarterback. I don't think they're going to be thrilled with being a number two quarterback. And if Green Bay doesn't give him opportunity, then you have drama. And this is a player that's already going to come with a little bit of, you know, being eccentric or whatever it might be. And that stuff flies when you're a starter where you might be a big time contributor. When you're a number three quarterback, teams don't want to take that on. They don't want to add any media attention. They don't want to add any drama or any whatever it might be. That's not what they're looking for. It is if you're a really talented player, and Shedeur Sanders is, but if he's just going to be a third stringer or a backup anyway, you're sometimes better off going in a different direction. And clearly the NFL did not view him as a starting caliber quarterback. Listen, if you did it, I wouldn't be upset with it on day three of the draft to get Shedeur Sanders, and hopefully he would be open to it, and then backing up Jordan starting next year. I'm totally fine with that. I don't see it happening. And again, unfortunately, we do not live in a vacuum. And then, Jair Alexander's the other one. They didn't grab any corners. So Jair's gone. Put him out of your mind. Out of sight, out of mind. If he comes back, I will eat my words, and I will gladly say that I was wrong. Just don't see it. I really, really, really don't see it. And I can't imagine a way at this point that he comes back. But if crazier things happened, yes. But I would recommend still putting him out of mind at this point in time. Overall, like I said, day two, a little bit unbalanced. All offense, no defense in the first three rounds of this draft for Green Bay. I like the picks. I think there was maybe some different ways that it could have gone where maybe it is a little bit more balanced and you feel a little bit better about things. But again, I love the fact that Goody's convicted. I do love the power and intensity that Belton plays with. And then, what you end up getting out of Savion Williams, that's going to be a really interesting aspect. I think you're going to get a player that can help you and just a different flavor of wide receiver than you have. So I like these picks a lot more than people have. I get the frustration maybe with the positions that you got, but these are two players I love Golden the other day. These are two players that I like, I think, a little bit more than what the consensus is out there on. Day three, and kind of looking ahead, this is going to be a lot of defense. Buckle in for a lot of defense, multiple corners and nose tackle, probably some sort of pass rusher as well. They're going to have to kind of make up for the fact that they have not been able to attack defense at all in rounds one, two, or three of this draft. All right, shout out to Habish and Rotier. Serious injuries need serious representation, and that's exactly what you get with Habish and Rotier. They've recovered millions for clients across the state of Wisconsin because to them, getting you the compensation you deserve is not just a game, it's a commitment. When you call Habish, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. Their number is 800-242-2874 or 800-2-HABISH. You can find them online at habish.com. Habish and Rotier, national reputation, hometown service. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelsinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Hewell, and Matt Geiger. Again, I'll be back for the draft party, 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. Live Q&A at Titletown Brewery at 6 o'clock p.m. Hope to see you guys there. Lots of stuff coming up this week. Make sure to subscribe, like, get those alerts. I appreciate you so freaking much. I'll see you all very, very soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.